Welcome to Vallejo's Community Presbyterian Church Sermon Podcast for Sunday, February 12, 2017. The Reverend Wendy Camori Stager is preaching. The sermon today is the sixth in our series of Who Are You? The sermon is Create Right Relationship. The gospel reading today is Matthew 5, verses 21 through 26.
Can I just say, I am tired of the name-calling. In this past election season and now in the new presidency, you just hear some stuff going by every day. So-called judges, baskets of deplorables, uppity women, wrong, stupid. And then this week, right, there was that rather colorful one, the fascist loofah-faced bleep given. Not even going to repeat it, but, you know, I already knew I was preaching about name-calling, and it shows up as this on Facebook. I think David Lawson sent that one to me with the comment of, I'm not into name-callings, but that one was particularly colorful and and clever. So in preparing this, I ended up doing a lesson with the youth group, which is mostly middle schoolers and pretty much mostly boys, on Wednesday night. And I asked the young people to share some of the names that they had heard, the name calling they had heard in the last week. It's not as tame as, like, we called each other dork or goofball or goody two-shoes, right? They had no trouble filling an entire, like, flip chart page with the powerful and damaging words, most of which are not repeatable here. And that even they were saying, like, are we allowed to put down the bad words? I'm like, put in the little asterisks, right? And they're like, oh, wait, I heard that one. And they're just like, put them on post-it notes and sticking them on this sheet. And I know the insults fly. I know it's middle school, but even I think was surprised at the volume and the content of what our young people are hearing. And although you could say that these verbal phrases are not as dangerous or as a fist fight or a shooting, I want to pause and acknowledge how violent this name calling really is. Psychologists tell us that it's possible through the excessive use of language to undermine someone's dignity and security through insults or humiliation, especially when it's done in a sudden way or in a repeated way. It can lead to deep emotional pain and scarring. And the language can be hurtful or even abusive when there's that pattern of control over or power over someone else. In this part of the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus is taking name-calling pretty darn seriously. Jesus says to the people who chose to come and listen to him this day, you heard it was said in ancient times, don't murder, and whoever murders shall be liable to judgment. But he takes it so much farther. But Jesus says, I say to you, if you're even angry with your brother or sister, you will be liable to judgment. I want to put a caveat in here that it's not the emotion of anger that it's the sin, but it's the anger of judging someone else. So there's a separate sermon about anger there. I'm not going to preach it today and make you all stay here for an additional 30 minutes. We'll get to that some other time. But I think that what Jesus is saying is if you're angry and you're guilty of wishing harm to another person in that anger, then yeah, you are also liable to being judged. And if you insult a brother or a sister, you'll be liable to the council. The word in the original text is raca, R-A-C-A. Oh, is that what it means? Okay, I didn't go chase that one down. But, right, it's not a term that we would say to each other. But at that time, I'm sure we have something like that. But at that time, that was like, oh, that's a bad word. Like, to show contempt for one's head. Yes. So, like, right? And then if you say, "You fool," you will be liable to the hell of fire. Name calling is a big deal to Jesus. It's a sin, the way that murder is a sin. Eugene Peterson's message, where he kind of gives a paraphrase and adds colorful language, and he adds an interpretation at the end of verse 23. He writes, "The simple moral fact is that words kill." And, you know, trying to minimize the damage of our language doesn't excuse it. Have you ever been hurt by a name and somebody said something, and then you go, "Not so much." And the person goes, "Oh, I was just kidding." Right? It's just words. Don't be so sensitive. But I'll be honest, I'm guilty of this name-calling too. And if we're all honest, really all of us are. Maybe it's a fit of anger. You just want to look at somebody and be like, "You're so stupid. You're a fool," and walk away. Maybe it's only in your head. Maybe it's only when you're in the car by yourself. Right? It's safer that way. But by admitting that I'm part of the problem opens up the possibility to be part of the solution. And to be here in worship with you all, opening scripture, reflecting on it together, choosing to be here this morning at 9 o'clock, choosing to listen to a sermon, singing songs about choosing to be a blessing for life. We're the ones who are seeking and asking Jesus if we're walking the right path. I think there's some hope in that, that we're choosing to listen to a different voice. Because here's the twist in this text. The word for us is not about all the times we've been hurt by someone else, and Jesus is going to love us and pick us up. It's not about the times that you've been the victim. It really is about coming to terms with the ways we have been promoters of the verbal violence and to change our ways to break that pattern. For the next verse of Scripture turns it back to the people who choose to listen to Jesus. And he says, "So when you are offering your gift at the altar," meaning when you are coming to a place of worship, "and you remember and become aware of the idea that a brother or sister has something against you." It's not, what am I trying to say? A friend has a grudge against you. Leave your gift there before the altar and go and be reconciled to your brother or sister, and then come and offer your gift. Peterson says, "If you're out on the street and an old enemy walks by, don't lose a minute. Make the first move. Make things right with that person." And Jesus has words for us when someone is upset at us. Our role and invitation is to go and approach that person, not wait for them to come back to us. You're supposed to take the initiative. We're called to acknowledge our own wrongness, to honestly recognize how our words have hurt someone else. As followers of Christ and people called to a better way, a higher way, a more loving way. I learned an important lesson about this taking initiative in love really early in ministry. I was working as a youth director at my home church in Southern California, and I was an interim youth director. I had just left Westminster Woods. I'd packed up my car. They needed somebody right away. I showed up. I made it to youth group. I'm meeting all of these people and kids and adult advisors, and I haven't even, you know, unpacked any boxes. And two girls showed up to youth group that night drunk, two ninth graders. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like, what did I just sign myself up for? And I'm just thinking, okay, these two girls, I'll call them Jane and Jennifer, I had some words for them in my head, like, you, oh, I get it, you're the troublemakers. Or, man, they are messed up. But my mentor, the senior pastor at this church, when he said, how'd the first evening go? And I went, well, this is what happened, and they went home or whatever, and I'm like, now what do I do with all that? And he goes, you go, you take him out for ice cream. And I'm like, I'm sorry, what? He's like, you go, you know, that's what you need to do. And that needs to be your highest priority this particular week. And I'm like, I don't have anything to say to them that I particularly would be appropriate to say to them. And he's like, no, here's what you say. You say, hey, Jane and Jennifer, the only thing I know about you is that you showed up drunk to youth group on Sunday night. Tell me something else about you. I'm like, okay, I could do that. So I did. I called these two girls up, and we went out for ice cream, and they were remorseful, but they also talked about how hard ninth grade had been, how, you know, they weren't really proud of their actions. And those two girls were some of the closest girls that I had that year. And we came to have a good relationship and seeking. And there was tough stuff going on for them at that moment in time. The other story I heard this week about that taking the initiative was on TED Talks. Anybody else listen to TED Talks? Oh, a few of you, yay. TED Talks, TED stands for Technology, Entertainment, and Design. And there are these people who organize these TED conferences where they find fabulous ideas and they work with the researcher or the person who's doing it and refine their idea down into this really nicely done PowerPointed talk in an auditorium, and then they videotape it. And they're put out on the internet for free. So you can watch these 15 minutes of the expert in their particular field talking about what it is that they're researching. They vary really widely. I mean, there's like underwater photography to how do you, you know, renovate the savannah in Africa to this person who was Elizabeth Lesser, who's a wellness specialist. Because I'm listening to there's a podcast too, the TED Radio Hour in December. The topic for that whole hour was reconciliation. And this wellness specialist, I don't know if I totally know what a wellness specialist is, but this wellness specialist started telling her story in her response to hearing all the different name calling. She says, I'm launching a new initiative. It's to help all of us, myself included, to counteract the tendency to otherwise. She says, we're all busy people, but I'm calling my initiative Take the Other to Lunch. If you're a Republican, you can take a Democrat to lunch. If you're a Democrat, think of it as taking a Republican to lunch. And if the idea of taking any of these people to lunch makes you lose your appetite, I suggest you start more local, because there is no shortage of the other right in your own neighborhood. Maybe it's the person who worships at the mosque, or the church, or the synagogue down the street, or someone from the other side of the abortion conflict, or maybe your brother-in-law who doesn't believe in global warming. Anyone whose lifestyle may frighten you, or whose point of view makes the smoke come out of your ears. And she goes on to say, a couple weeks ago, I took a conservative Tea Party woman to lunch. And on paper, she passed the one of those people who would make your ears smoke. She's an activist for the right. The person who's talking is an activist for the left. And we use some guidelines to keep the conversation elevated. And she recommends anybody who wants to try to take the other to lunch could use these two. First of all, decide on a goal to get to know one person from a group you may have negatively stereotyped. And then before you really get going in the conversation, agree on some ground rules. My Tea Party lunchmate and I came up with these. Don't persuade, defend, or interrupt. Be curious. Be conversational. Be real. And listen. And from there we dove in. She suggests these questions. One, share some of your life experiences with me. Two, what issues deeply concern you? Three, what have you always wanted to ask someone from the other side? She goes on to share, my lunch partner and I came away with some really important insights. I'm going to share just one with you. I think it has relevance to any problem between people anywhere. I asked her why her side makes such outrageous allegations and lies about my side. What? She wanted to know. Like, we liberals are a bunch of elitist, morally corrupt terrorist lovers. Well, she was shocked. She thought my side beat up on her Tea Party side way more often, and that we called them brainless, gun-toting racists. And we both marveled at the labels that fit none of the people we actually knew. No. And since we'd established some trust, we believed in one another's sincerity. Now, Elizabeth Lesser is not a pastor. She's a wellness specialist. I don't even know if she's a Christian. But doesn't that sound like a sermon? It's a message of hope. It's a message of love. And I'm not saying this thing of taking a step towards the other is limited to Christians. I'm glad for that. And yet, as Christians, the ones who have already been given that gift of reconciliation with God through Christ, not by our own doing, but by grace, we, the ones who come and say that we're listening to Jesus' words in the Sermon on the Mount, we who want to be following Christ's footsteps, noticing that Christ is the one who reaches out in love, who takes the initiative. We have a God who sends Christ to earth to us. If then we're followers of Christ, there's that call to have that initiative to bridge the gaps, so that perhaps we as Christians might be the ones who show that Christ-like love, making things right with our brother and sisters, making things right with the other, and by doing so, be known in the world for our love. It's like that song you might have learned as a child. They will know we are Christians by our love. Yes, they'll know we are Christians by our love. Let us then be known by our love.
You have been listening to Community Presbyterian Church Sermon Podcast. To learn more about Community Presbyterian Church and its ministries, come visit us at 2800 Georgia Street in Vallejo, California, or visit our website, cpcvallejo.org. You can also email us at cpcvallejo@sbcglobal.net. Have a blessed day.